I've long been fascinated with the history of wild birds in our country, so I'm excited to have writer and educator Margaret Barker here in the studio with me today. Like me, Margaret is a Chesapeake Bay native with an interest in watching birds. She and her colleagues, Paul Basich and Carol Henderson, just published a book called Feeding Wild Birds in America, Culture, Commerce, and Conservation. Welcome, Margaret.
Thank you, Brooks. Delighted to be here.
You've mentioned to me that feeding birds is much more than just putting seeds outside for wildlife. That, in fact, supplying our avian friends with food is an exciting conservation story. How is that?
Well, it turns out that people who were promoting bird feeding were the very same people who were working for federal bird protection laws. And you might know that before we had some state laws and eventually the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918, it was okay to capture or kill any bird. So the American robin was on the menu. Cardinals and mockingbirds were sold as caged birds. Hunting was unrestricted, and entire birds were killed for fashion, mostly to decorate women's hats. Bird populations suffered terribly. So bird feeding was promoted to get the public to see birds up close, learn to care about them, and to work to protect them.
One of my favorite things in your book is the reprint of a 1917 poster called Feed the Birds This Winter. It was printed and distributed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture around the end of the First World War. At the top of the poster, it says, "Birds will repay you by destroying thousands of insects that harm your gardens, trees, and crops." How'd you find this? And how significant was its role in encouraging our grandparents to feed the birds?
Well, that's a fun question because co-author Paul Basich, who's also from Maryland, and I spent many hours at the Patuxent Wildlife Research Center Library poring over historic documents. And in one bird lore magazine, we found one mention of the Feed the Birds This Winter poster. It then took us about a year, but we found it on microfiche at the National Archives in College Park. The poster makes the case that if people feed birds in winter around their homes and farms, then those same birds will stay around and raise young and eat harmful insects and weed seeds during the growing seasons. Well, this argument was made to justify protecting birds. But it turns out that the idea that if you help the birds, they'll help you back became very widespread. And it does seem in the years that followed that bird feeding became a tradition across America.
So it was the start to, really, an early version of Project Feeder Watch, which I know you coordinated for Cornell University's Lab of Ornithology. What can you tell me about that?
Well, Project Feeder Watch actually began in Ontario by a wildlife biologist who was curious about which birds were coming to local feeders. She thought scientists could learn about bird populations with that simple data. And she was right. So nearly 20,000 people each year watch their feeders for Project Feeder Watch. And over the years, the data have revealed changes in bird numbers and locations. Last year's Feeder Watch data, for example, showed once again the Carolina wren continues to go further north each year.
Well, I know my son Jack and I will be watching our feeders this weekend and sending our counts to the lab. Thanks for joining me today, Margaret.
You are so welcome, Brooks, and thank you for watching the birds.
Thank you. You can learn more about our national birds in Margaret's book, Feeding Wild Birds in America, Culture, Commerce, and Conservation, or from explorenature.org. The Nature of Things is produced by Irvine Nature Center for WYPR. For Irvine Nature Center, I'm Executive Director Brooks Paternotte.